Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, March 11th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice. To access them, all you need to do is go to the website at whyagain.org. Once there, click on the link in the upper left-hand corner that says Start Here. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional state into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been granted. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click it, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through the use of that worksheet process and or they've been given powerful testimonials about how the application of that tool in their life has improved both their relationships and their emotional state. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often because it leads to comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581. When you call that number, press 1. It'll put a little icon of a phone by your phone, of a hand by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. And there was another announcement I was going to make, something about, I guess I'll remind us that we did have a support group meeting last night, and there'll be another one next Tuesday and next Thursday. The information about that is available at mindshiftersacademy.org website. I'm a little bit behind in getting the archives of this show uploaded there, but ever since January 10th, we've been reading The Way of Mastery with commentary, and many of those shows have been edited out of the two-hour segments down to the 1 hour and uploaded to a special page on mindshiftersacademy.org website. So feel free to take advantage of that. There's also a page where I've given people access again, once again, to the audio files of me just simply reading The Way of Mastery as close to verbatim as I can. And so that's another resource that's available. And, of course, the full archives of this internet show, which has been running for over 11 years now, is available at whyagain.org, whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the microphone, the picture of the microphone, it'll take you to the archives where you can scroll through a date or type in a date and search for it, or you know, like spin the wheel and see if you get lucky and just listen to whatever comes up. So the focus of our work in the past 2 months is The Way of Mastery. And where we left off on Thursday, yesterday I didn't read any of it or do any commentary about it, we had a discussion about this process. And where I left off reading, what we'll pick up today is in Lesson 5, the last few pages, at the bottom of page 64, it's talking about the fifth key to the kingdom. The previous four keys to the kingdom are desire, intention, allowance, and surrender. And we've talked about each of them. And now the fifth key to the kingdom is the importance of humility. And the text reads, "No single characteristic is of greater importance than humility." And what it comes to me to say here is that essentially humility in this work is another way to say living from direct observation. And if that strikes you as odd, just stay tuned because I'm going to give some explanation about that. When Dr. Michael Rice was actively working with the Kouboris Foundation, he was the director of a foundation that was in charge of translating the oldest known copy of the New Testament directly from the ancient Aramaic into English. And when he was doing that work, they came across a word that in the ancient Aramaic, which got translated into Latin and Greek and then eventually English, and it comes down to us as the word humility. But the original word in the ancient Aramaic and the context in that culture had a very different definition. The definition in the ancient Aramaic for that word was the ability to look for and see the highest and best in another person and then choose to cooperate only with that. So even if a person was raging at you, you would be able to look at them, and as using the words from The Way of Mastery, you'd still see the face of Christ in that other person. You would see a cry for help and healing, because there is either only the extension of this loving energy or a cry for help and healing. That's all there is in the world, according to The Way of Mastery. So I started this by saying, the word humility is really, you know, the importance of humility is like saying the importance of learning to live from direct observation. How did I get there? Because the ancient Aramaic definition for humility is my ability, your ability, anyone's ability to look for and see the highest and best in another person. This means being actively questioning, open, and observing in the moment. This means to not get distracted by appearances. What are appearances? Your perception. Whenever your mind shows you a picture that leaves you feeling something less than love, don't get distracted by it. This teaching says, understand, all there is the extension of creation. And if you go into a situation and you look for and see, you observe actively that everybody is just like you. Nobody really knows what the heck is going on. Everybody's doing the best they can in each moment with whatever resources they have. We are all part of the extension of the creative energy in form. If you go into a situation observing that, that's humility. So in that way, the importance of humility is the same as the importance of learning to live in direct observation. Learning to notice and release any attachment I might have to living from belief, or living from my need to be right, or living from my need to prove I'm right and the other person's wrong. Especially, as we know in this work, if there's any form of negative emotion up in my mind or a tension in my physical body, these are the early warning signs that I'm off the mark, that my perception has gotten clouded or is way off the mark. So to come back to the text, it says, no single characteristic is of greater importance than humility. There's nothing more important than learning to be awake and aware in the moment and be able to see the highest and best in another person and choose to cooperate only with that. The text goes on. Not the feigned humility that is taught in certain world religions, but a genuine humility. For humility does not mean that you stand up in front of a group of people who are giving you a standing ovation and you say, no, don't do that. No, this is not important. And then you look like you're humble. But inwardly you're saying, oh, God, that feels good. Clap a little louder. Hey, clap a little longer. Do you know that kind of humility? It's not the kind of humility that we're talking about here. That's the kind of humility you were taught in schools and other religions. Genuine humility flows from the deep-seated recognition. Recognition, in this, I would say, observation. Active, alert observation. The recognition that you cannot save yourself. The recognition or the observation that you were created and you are not the creator in the ultimate sense. That you are an effect of the energy of creation expressing in form. You are not the cause of the energy of creation expressing in form. And the text is clear here to say, in an absolute sense, genuine humility flows from the direct observation or the deep-seated recognition that something called life is not yours as a possession. You don't possess it. That there is something beyond your capacity of containment, beyond your capacity of intellectual understanding. And that if that something ever decided to give up, in quotes, loving you, close quotes, you would cease to be. If that something choose to withdraw its energy, the creative flow of energy through you, you would cease to be. The text goes on. No matter how deep you go into the depths of creation, the depths of God, and no matter how deep you achieve an awareness of the consciousness of your union with creation or God, what creation is, what God is, what light, what love is, forever remain beyond your, even when you're growing in your capacity, it forever remains beyond your capacity to understand creation, to understand life, to understand God. It is like an ocean of infinite depth. when you realize that strive as you might, you will never wrap your little s self around that source, capital S source. When you realize that, you will rest into humility, genuine humility. You will enter into one situation after another, observing, I don't know everything. So whatever it is I think I know is either only partially true or perhaps even completely false. So what might I learn in this next present moment? The text goes on at the top of page 65. Why is this important? Mark these words well. As you progress along the path of the way of the heart, as you dissolve and loosen the shackles upon your mind, as the interior conflicts within you are healed and settled, as you begin to accept the abundance that the Father, Creator, creation itself would bestow upon you in all levels of life and all levels of feeling and perception, as you begin to taste of the grandeur and the greatness that would flow through you, you will discover that the, quote, enemies, close quote, become more subtle. At a very immature, basic, and naive level, every child views, at some stage, its parents as being its enemies, does it not? For example, the child says, what do you mean I can't have the car tonight? What do you mean I've got to be home by 10 p.m.? And in that moment, the parent becomes the enemy. As you move more and more into mastery, and again, mastery arises from innocence, questioning, direct observation, openness, asking to be taught. As you move more and more into mastery, you will be sorely tempted to believe that you are done. That's a trap. You will be sorely tempted to believe, I can do this. You know those prayers I used to do when I began, those simple exercises of awareness I used when I started my path? I don't need that anymore. I've mastered that. Anytime you hear a voice within yourself saying, I'm done, you may rest assured you are not. And you stand in danger of losing what you have already gained. Humility is the recognition, again, the direct observation, that the more you move into mastery, the more there is the desire for discipline and vigilance. Desire as that energy of creation, the corrective impulse of spirit itself. Discipline does not mean doing something hard that you do not like to do. Discipline is like the skill of an artist who cultivates and refines the skill. Simply out of a deep desire and a delight to create more beautifully. An athlete disciplines a muscle so that the muscle works even more beautifully than it did the day before. Out of the sheer delight to extend greater beauty into the world. While you remain in existence, the creations of consciousness that are unlike love have created a whole lot of vibratory patterns that would just love to pull you down. Therefore, the discipline of the mind that is required is to recognize that while the body lasts, there can be a delight in consciously repeating the decision to teach only love. Selectively choosing only the vibrational patterns to be allowed into your consciousness that reflect the truth, capital T truth, and the beauty and the worthiness of who you truly are. judgment cannot reflect such light. Anger and hatred cannot reflect such light. Fear and paranoia, fear of rejection, fear of the opinions of others, and such vibrations can never reflect the regal grandeur of your being. Therefore, understand well that humility, living from direct observation, being able to look for, observe, find the highest and best in another person and choose to cooperate only with that. It also means being able to look for your own highest and best. This regal grandeur of your being that wants to express through you. Understand well that that process of direct observation and looking for the highest and best in another and then choosing to cooperate only with that, that humility is absolutely essential. So here's a paradox for you. Paradoxically, as greatness is expressed through you, the temptation will still be to allow egoic energies to make a home in your mind. The ego will say, boy, you are really quite a master, you know. You really deserve all this adulation. Why don't you just keep, maybe, I don't know, maybe a little bit, just a, maybe 10% of it for yourself. That's a trap. Of myself, I do nothing. But the creation within me does all things. Through me, because I am being lived. I am being seen through. I'm being breathed moment to moment. So it's a trap to think I'm a master. I really deserve some adulation here. I really deserve some credit. The text goes on at the top of page 66. A master accepts the love and gratitude offered by those whom his or her teachings have touched and gives it all to creation. Because the master recognizes that of themselves, these things could not have been done. I learned also to be tempted when those who would come to me who were sick found healing in my presence. It was tempting to say, yes, look what I've done. I've really earned this. I spent 40 days and 40 nights in the desert. I've been to India and Tibet. I've been to England. I've studied with all the masters of Egypt. Yes, I really deserve to be seen as a healer and a teacher. But I learned through humility to remember the simplicity that of myself, I can do nothing. I cultivated within myself the art of always being a student of love and not the professor of love who thinks he's done just because he's got a lot of letters after his name. As you progress, as you allow more of the abundance of God's love to flow through you, you begin to stand up out of the crowd and you begin to attract those that want the light. As that occurs, you must practice discipline and vigilance by remembering humility, direct observation. Always, 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 until you're remembering it with every breath. Why? Well, here's why. If you're living in this world and you feel that no one looks up to you, no one takes you as an authority. If that's the case, there's only one reason. That's because you have resisted the truth of your being, and through denial, you've pushed the Creator's light away out of your fear and your deep-seated fear that you might appear to be different than everybody else. The world would teach you to be a doormat so that you fit in and don't ruffle anybody's feathers. But as you become empowered, one way you will know that it is occurring is that some people will not like you. You will push their buttons just by walking into the room. Because darkness abhors light. It's that simple. Humility is absolutely essential. Through the doorway of humility, the light of power can be turned on through you in ever greater voltages. If that voltage does not seem to be flowing through your mind, look well to see if you're remembering humility and giving yourself to it. For the light of creation can only shine through you to the degree that you're willing to take responsibility for it, which means giving the fruits of it back to its source and not claiming it as your own. When you claim nothing for yourself, all things can flow through you. The energy of Holy Spirit can gather millions of beings to come to you in many planes because it knows you will not distort the love of God, the love of light, the love of creation, by usurping creation's position and putting yourself upon the throne. Humility is a chief characteristic to cultivate. Direct observation, the ability to look for in the moment, see the highest and best in another, find it, and then choose to cooperate only with that. This is a chief tool, practice, mindfulness to cultivate. Therefore, when you pray, indeed ask for greatness. Let the Creator know that you're ready for the fullness of the Christ to be incarnate, and simply hold the promise within you that you will always remember that you are not the doer and the maker. You're merely the one who's come to recognize that only the love of creation can fulfill you as a soul. Only the fulfillment of your purpose can be channeled, for love can bring you the success that you truly, truly seek. When you're fully committed to that, rather than being committed to wandering about or wondering about other people's opinions, then that power can begin to move through you. When you're willing to let go of the physical world, heaven will come to replace it. When you are willing to let go of your need for egoic grandness, true grandeur will begin to pour forth through you. There is a paradox within spirit. Learn to discern it. Become a master of it. And never, never neglect the need for discipline based on the foundation of humility. Again, I'm adding the word observation here. Direct observation, a special kind of mindfulness, being awake and aware in the moment, questioning in the moment, refusing to live from belief. The text goes on to say, you see, this is what has caused you to fear the energy of desire. Because in the past, and this might have been hundreds of light years away or lifetimes ago or 60, 80 years ago if you're an older person today in physical body, in the past, and that can go back a long way, you have decided to find out what it would be like to let all that power be claimed as your own, to be used to serve the voice of ego. That is what you're afraid of, because that doesn't go well. That creates the most intense of human dramas and traumas. We're seeing some of it now on our planet. We're seeing countries being invaded by other countries or you know, individual rulers obsessed with a power, believing that they are the powerful one. So this is what has caused you to fear the energy of desire. Because in the past, you have decided to find out what it would be like to let all of that power be claimed as your own, to be used to serve the voice of ego. That is what you were afraid of. But if you cultivate these stages and ground them in humility, you will never need to fear the misuse of desire, this energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through you. Therefore, in your prayers, as often as you can remember to do it, remember that what you decree is, so speak clearly within yourself. Here's a recommended prayer. Source, Creator, God, Goddess, all that is, Abba, Father, Mother, I am ready to be what you created me to be. I choose to remember that I am effect and not cause. Thy will be done, knowing that your will is my full happiness. Reveal then that path through which that happiness can be known. For my way has never worked, but your way always does. That's a suggested prayer. The text goes on. Then, in each day, remember the energy of appreciation. It is well and good to appreciate one another. But in the privacy of your own meditation and prayers, appreciate how the power of that source, capital S source, of love, capital L love, that I have called God or creation or light, appreciate how the power of that source is living and moving and breathing to bring the people, the books, the teachers, and the experiences that are gently unraveling the cocoon of the ego around you. And it's awakening you to the truth, the beauty, the majesty, the grandeur, and the greatness of life itself. Life wants to breathe through you as magically and powerfully as it breathes through a thunderstorm, or the leaf on a tree, or the radiance in a newborn baby's eyes. That life is what you are. That life is the presence of the Creator's love, the depth of the ocean welling up into the waves of creation. Let, therefore, that life alone be your guide in all things, and rest in appreciation before the infinite mystery that life is, and say yes. Say yes to it. Say yes to life, that you are willing to let the fullness of it wash through you and carry you into an ever-deepening understanding and comprehension of all that life and creation is. If you would well receive it, resting in the awareness of divine humility is the sweetest of experiences you can ever know. Many of you look upon me and say, oh boy, would I love to be where Yeshua is. Think a thought and you are with someone. Think a thought and you are in that universe. I tell you this, where I abide is in a vibrational frequency with many, many other beings whose consciousness never wavers for an instant from the deep appreciation, humility, before the mystery of all that creation is. We abide in the great delight of knowing that we live yet not us, but our Creator lives as us. key line in this book coming up next. Key line. The only difference between being a master and being a student is that the master has mastered the art of always being a student. Wide open, direct observation, what can life, what can love, what can the flow of creation teach me in this moment? That's what a master does in every single moment. I paused because someone had a hand up and I went to turn on their microphone and they disappeared. So I'm going to read that line again because this has been a cornerstone of my work. When I slowed down and caught this line and I started to practice the awareness of this truth, it changed my life. It moved my work to the next level exponentially. The only difference between being a master and being a student is that the master has mastered the art of always being a student. Earlier in a previous lesson, one of the headings read, "Mastery arises from innocence." It has said several times, "Mastery is not control. This is not an intellectual pathway. The Western mind, the Western world, equates mastery with intellectual processing, crunching things down into a few words, a few concepts, diluting it or squishing it down so that it's comprehensible to the 9-bit conscious logical mind. That's not what this pathway is about. This pathway is about putting that conscious logical mind aside. This is why that's woven into the pattern for the forgiveness worksheet, the reality management worksheet. I cancel my need to be right. I cancel my need for anyone or anything to change, including myself. I put my conscious logical mind on the shelf for now because this pathway is not about the intellect. This pathway is about the heart. This pathway is about direct observation, questioning, asking to be shown, to be taught, by life, by love, by creation in each moment. This pathway is about openness. This pathway is about always being a student. And in this pathway, I'm a student of life. I'm a student of love. I'm a student of the energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through me. And the only way I can be a student of that is to be in a subordinate position to that, to ask to be taught. This reminds me of one of Guy Finley's lectures where he talks about, we're never going to master a principle. No one masters love. No one masters compassion. No one masters gratitude. However, with the direct observation that the only way I can learn from something is to put myself in a subordinate position to it and to stay open and ask and be curious, if I put myself in that position and ask to be shown, and I put myself in a relationship with these energies, these complex webs of connection of the heart energy and the mind energy, and I ask to be taught by life, by love, by gratitude, by these principles, eventually the power behind the principle will lend me some of its power. And temporarily, when I'm in that space, I'll have access to more than my mind can be consciously aware of. I will have an experience that transcends language. That's from Guy Finley. If I put myself in a subordinate position to these principles, the power behind the principle will lend me some of its power. I'll become that conduit through which this energy of life and love and creation can flow into the world, and it won't be distorted by my egoic process. It won't be distorted by my thought, you know, it's pretty amazing that I was able to be here right now and to ask to be shown. I'm a pretty amazing guy. That distortion won't happen. I will be that conduit that is wide open and transparent. And the I falls away. And what will be left is simply this energy of creation expressing and extending in form. That can only happen if I choose to be a perpetually avid student in each new present moment. I'm not just going to blithely say, oh yeah, I might learn something here. I am going to be perpetually avid in my role as a student. I'm going to be hungry for what life can teach me moment to moment. So, to repeat that line, the only difference between being a master and being a student is that the master has mastered the art of always being a student. The text goes on to say, desire, intention, allowance, surrender. What do you truly want? Are you willing to feel it and let that thread of desire carry you home? Can you remember to use some time constructively? By focusing your attention, by reminding yourself of what you are truly here for, you are not here to survive. You are here to live as the truth of who you are. Allowance is not a passive acceptance of things as they are, but a recognition that there is something quite beautiful at work. There is an intelligence, a love that knows you better than you know yourself and is presenting you moment to moment with jewels, gems, and blessings and lessons that something is weaving the tapestry of your life and nothing is happening by accident. Surrender is the cultivation of the recognition that your happiness can be found only in the submission of your will to the will of creation, to the flow of life. For your will has been to be in conflict and struggle and limitation. The creation's will is that you live without conflict, that you live in peace, joy, fulfillment, and happiness. Some call it bliss. If you ever wonder how to anchor your awareness in humility, stop what you're doing and ask yourself this question. Did I create myself? You know well the answer is no. No, I don't even know when I was created. Something birthed me. What is it? That question will bring you to humility rather quickly. Do you know how to give birth to a star? No. Do you know how to give birth to a leaf on a tree? No. Do you even truly know how you lift your hand from your lap? No. What then do you know? Nothing. Nothing. Allow yourself to understand that you do not know anything. That observation puts you in the state of divine ignorance, and you will rest in the humility that finally allows your Creator to move through you and reveal to you all things. So there's that phrase. I've read this book so many times, I'm not sure if it's in a variety of places throughout this book or if this one statement just stuck with me, and I quote it often. divine ignorance. Divine ignorance arises when I'm in that mode of direct observation, when I'm wide open and completely honest. I understand how little I know about myself, about what I need, about what my brother and sister need, about how I might be a blessing in this moment to myself and others. I don't know any of that. Allow yourself to understand that you do not know anything. You don't even know how to lift your hand from your lap. You don't know how to give birth to a leaf on a tree or create a star. In that state of divine ignorance, you will rest in the humility, in the direct observation of the highest and best in, through, as, and around you in each moment, and cooperate only with that. And that will finally allow your Creator to move through you and reveal to you all things. Beloved friends, the way of the heart is that way which corrects perception and brings right-mindedness so that you no longer are the maker and the doer or the director. Your opinions will come to mean nothing to you whatsoever. Out of a grand emptiness, you will discover a perfect peace. Life will bear you on its wings. Through you, life will express in ever greater dimensionality the exquisite and infinite love and power and creativity that is creation, until you swear that creation, the mind of God, is all there is. And there will be no place to find a trace of you, what you think of as yourself. For if enlightenment is the ending of separation, how can there be a maker and a doer? Can the wave direct itself? The ego is an attempt to do so, and it always fails. Peace then be with you always. Let peace pervade your being at all times. You know, earlier in this lesson or in lesson four, they talk about the peace we're talking about is possible for you to feel in the moment when the building is crumbling around you and the bank account has zeros in it. That same quality of peace is available to you in each new present moment. That doesn't make any sense to us with the conscious logical mind and with the intellect. That's why it's got to be something other than my conscious logical mind that takes me to that peace. There's a phrase in the ancient scriptures, there's a peace that surpasses all understanding. Why does it surpass all understanding? Because I have to give up the intellect to get in touch with it. If it's a peace that I understand, I just feel so good because now there's that cushion of money in the account. I feel so good because now I see gas is going back down to $3 a gallon or $2.50 a gallon. I feel so good because I just heard that they're going to have a ceasefire in the Ukraine and Russia. If there's a peace that I have tied to something outside my connection, my conscious connection to my source, that peace is as fragile as the direction of the wind in the next moment. And it is instantly connected to my creating the fear that I might lose that peace or the external dynamic, which I think is causing it, in the next moment. All of that thought, all of the intellectual processing that creates the ego, always fails to bring me that peace. How do I get there? I cultivate something that's other than the intellect. I pick up some practices like the way of the heart, which is a way that corrects your false perceptions, and it brings right-mindedness. It wakes you up to the idea that you're not doing any of this. You are not the maker and the doer or the director. Your opinions lose all of their meaning. You realize that's the product of the intellect and a previous lesson talked about, you know, my intellect is a garbage can. It's been collecting the thoughts of humanity. There's some good stuff in there, here and there. There's some gratitude, and especially if I had a loving family. But it's also all the history of war and genocide and struggle to be right and the focus on the physical as though that's the ultimate prize without any awareness of the intuitive mind or the spirit or the soul or the life of the creative energy moving through me. So my intellect is like a garbage can, and all it can do is spit back what's been put into it. The way of the heart corrects that mass of misperceptions and bitterness and challenge and competition and corruption, and it brings right-mindedness. It wakes me up to the fact that I am not the maker and the doer, not even the director. All those thoughts I have, all those beliefs, all my opinions that I'm right and the other person's wrong, all my opinions that if you're from my country, you're a good person, and if you're not, then we should kill you at war. All of that comes to mean nothing to me whatsoever. And I begin to wake up to the grand emptiness. Out of that grand emptiness, perfect peace. Life begins to flow through me, and I begin to be aware of it. It's always been there flowing through me, but I begin to be aware of that movement of life. And through me, life will express in even greater dimensionality. It will express the exquisite, the infinite love, the power and creativity that is the flow of creative energy. And there will be no place to find my thoughts about myself. There will be no attachment to those thoughts as they move through my mind. I'll chuckle and laugh and say, oh, isn't that something? I used to think I was so grand. For if enlightenment is the ending of that dream of separation, then how can there be a maker and a doer? The wave doesn't direct itself. The ego is the attempt to do so, but it always fails. Peace then be with you always. Let peace pervade you at all times. How do you get that peace? You get into divine ignorance. You get into the direct observation that of yourself you do nothing. That you don't know anything about how you got here or what your life is about or what your brother or sister needs or how you can be a blessing to yourself and others in the next moment. Just observe it. Feel it, understand it, get into that great emptiness, and that peace will provide your being at all times. Know that you are safe in the flow of creative energy that some call love, that arises from the great source of mystery that would move through you with every breath and every word until you hear only the impetus of guidance that wells up from the depth of your being, and you hear it as a gentle voice that you trust completely, and you will know the freedom that you seek. You already abide where we are. Trust this, know this, rely on this. Explore the way of the heart, and you will come to know the truth of life, of love, capital L, love. Be you therefore at peace, beloved friends. Amen. Amen. And so it is. That concludes the reading of Lesson 5 for the first time. Desire, intention, allowance, surrender, and humility. And as it came to me yesterday morning so powerfully, this is really just mindfulness. This is really just a slightly more refined, a slightly more targeted process of mindfulness. And we are invited to step into this process moment to moment. Area code 803, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Hey, this is Chris. I was wondering, are you reading today?
All right. Can you say that again? I was having some difficulty hearing. Who is this?
I said, this is Chris. I was wondering, are you reading today?
You mean, are we giving psychic readings?
Yeah.
No. No, that's not this show. This show is about a set of tools offered by Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice, available through the website at whyagain.org.
Right. Okay, so how would I boost my creativity? Do that?
You're breaking up. Hello? Well, 803, you've dropped off. We're down to our last few minutes here, so our caller number is 563-999-3581. Grateful to everyone who's been with us on this ride for reading of The Way of Mastery with commentary. I'll remind us all that these first hours have been edited out and are on the website at mindshiftersacademy.org on a separate page. Most of them are already up. I'm a few shows behind because I've been blessedly busy this week, but there's a separate page there where you can get access to the first 12 lessons of The Way of Mastery with just me reading it straight through as close to verbatim as I can. And then there's a separate page where it says The Way of Mastery Lessons with Commentary. And those are the shows that we've been doing since January 10th. So feel free to make use of that archive. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you. And thanks for 3 days this week having to play a rerun for us.
That's all right. How are things?
Well, got Dad settled into the assisted living, and he's in the memory care section, which requires more assistance than in some of the other areas. And he's, you know, seems to like his space a lot better because it's not like the other place was more like just being in the hospital sharing a room with another patient. And he just wasn't thriving very well there, and I think he'll do better here. I hope so anyway.
All right. Well, we'll be sending loving thoughts and blessings toward that end.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Have a great show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Friday, so I hope everybody has a good weekend. It's Friday, March the 11th. 2022. And our calling number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. While we're waiting on Michael to get dialed in, I'll remind those who are participating in the monthly Mindshifters and Stillpoint Breathing that tomorrow is our breathing session at 10 o'clock Eastern Time, followed by Tuesday the 15th with our support meeting. So remember to join us and pick your mind shifter tonight and start writing on mind shifters and be ready for breathing tomorrow. And that would be awesome. Michael just popped in. I was just reminding those who were participating in the mind shifters that we were going to be doing mind shifters tomorrow.
And still point breathing, yes. Yay. another opportunity to breathe. Anybody who wants to join us, it'll be a small group, so we've got room. And it's a powerful online experience that actually, did you explain the structure of it? It's a one-year program.
No, I had just started with saying that we were going to breathe tomorrow.
Oh, cool. Well, we'll just let folks know if you want to take your process to the next level and you want to participate, there are three different levels of or three different ways of participating. You just do one session participation, or you can do a three session, or you can do a full year. And of course, the price drops from one to the other to the other. And if you're interested, if you have my number or Jeannie's, give us a call, or drop Jeannie an email at jeannie@whyagain.org. It's also a great way to support us. You know, when we do this radio show, we don't get paid to do it. We pay to do it. And with the fact that we're not traveling anymore, support if this is, you know, if this is supporting you, if this is making a difference for you, if this is assisting in your life, then, you know, support us. And we'll be expanding and expanding and expanding what's available. We're continuously working on upgrading. If you haven't looked at the work that Jeannie's done on the app in the last couple of months, make sure you upgrade to the latest one. The utility of it is just growing exponentially. There's just a whole lot more useful material in it right there on your phone. And to find it, all you do is go into your app store and type in Heartland, one word, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. And we'll be there to support you. One of the nice features that you can put in is that if you are in the app and, you know, you're doing a worksheet, either one of the two versions, or you're working on the children's game, or you're working on the commitment, or, you know, anywhere you're in the app, you can click a button right there, live, write us an email saying, well, what about this, or how does this work? And then Jeannie will get that email. We'll bring it up on the radio show, and then we'll send you back an email telling you when we answered your question. So we're doing everything we can do to make this as available as possible to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. We just set up this morning to begin, or actually to take the study group that's happening in Britain. There's a study group for why is this happening to me again that's happening in England. And a young lady named Yinka, starts with a Y, is running that book club. And we participated in it last week and just had a phenomenal response. So on the mark your calendar, on the 24th and the 31st of March, at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time. It's 8:30 London Time. It's called Hear My Voice Book Club. And so, Jeannie, you've got the link there, so maybe post it in the notes. And if anybody wants to pick that up, mark your calendar, December 24th and the 31st at 3:30 Eastern Time. So it'll be 2:30 Central Time, 1:30 Mountain Time, and 12:30 West Coast Time, California. And so the link will be there. It's a Zoom meeting. You can just tap right in and ask questions. And we're going to carry on with that for who knows how long. It might be another eternal event that we do as this radio show. You know, we're in our 11th year. And so the 24th and 31st of March, and we'll be continuing with that moving forward. So come and play. Come and join us. And if you have any questions or thoughts, our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. Call that number, and you'll be listening to the show live. And we'll look forward to your questions. If you call in and have a question, all you do is hit one, and we'll be having a conversation. In the meantime, I'm going to continue. There have been still more downloads on the power person dynamic. That's sort of been just really front and center, and we've talked about it, you know, the last couple of radio shows, but I want to go into it on still another level. It's just, you know, it's something that, you know, was integrated into the codependence to interdependence intensive back, 20 years ago or more, and it's remained relatively constant, but recently there's been a new level of download on it, new insight into it. So Now, this power person dynamic, and just for review, if you haven't been part of the show when we've talked about it, there are three things that cause the power person dynamic to be installed in someone's mind. And I say that installed just like you install a piece of software. So if three things occur simultaneously, the object of that situation is going to have a power person dynamic installed in their mind, and that power person dynamic is going to control every instant of the rest of their lives. And my offering is, this is what runs the world. This is the bottom line of what runs the world. So what are the three things? What are the three events that have to happen? One, there's someone who has more, and it's usually apparent with a child, though not necessarily, someone who has more power over your life than you do. I worked with a man a few years ago. He was in his 70s when he was in a store that was being robbed. They held a gun to his head, and in came that power person dynamic, and he did had do quite a bit of work to process through it. And whenever anything resonated that, I mean, it was full-blown major, what we call PTSD. It's really not, there's no D on PTS. It's really a natural response to a traumatic event. And there's no disorder about it, but it leads to disordered behavior in the future if we don't ever recognize what it is and clean it up. So this person has more power in your life than you do. They're not functioning as a human being. What's a human being? A human being is love. This person is not functioning as love. You know, they're in rage or fear or terror or trauma, whatever's going on for them. That's the second thing. Third thing is that the object of the circumstance perceives it as survival. You know, that's why it's usually apparent. You know, I count on this person for survival, and if they've withdrawn their support, they're caring, they're raging, what have you, then there's a tendency for there to be a perception in the child or the object of that situation of there being survival involved. So when those three things happen, the object of the situation, their energy field is open wide. They're just like an open book, a sponge, literally on an energetic level, taking in every energy from the environment, including the thoughts, the feelings, the dynamics, every dynamic that's going on in the power person, again, usually apparent. So this whole power person dynamic is a part of what we call the replicant mind. And the replicant mind is a mind that can only reproduce what's in it. It's like your computer. Your computer is a replicant device. It can only reproduce what's in it. If it's programmed into your computer that 2 plus 2 equals 3, then every time you ask your computer what 2 plus 2, the replicant mind of the computer, so-called mind, is going to tell you 3. If it's properly programmed that it's 4, then it's going to tell you 4. If it's programmed that it's 10, it's going to tell you 10. And someone under the influence of this power person dynamic is exactly the same. Whatever's been structured in is going to run behavior at that point. So this is part of the replicant mind, and that replicant mind is literally developed over thousands of generations. And the seeming survival skills, which usually relate to some form of hostility or fear, develops over thousands of generations. And everything that it prompts is a decision from the past. So for the power person dynamic to be active, something had to happen in the past. Remember that this device we call a body-mind unit, and it's what appears to be mental function, it is basically a decision-making machine. Decisions from the past will present themselves as reasoned answers and choices today, but they're not choices at all. Now, if I say don't think about the color of your car, whatever information comes forward, whatever that resonates in you comes forward, and that's a decision. It's automatic. There's no choice about it. It's just whatever's there. You know, what's the front door of your house look like? Decision. It's stored in the mind, and up comes whatever's there. If you just moved last week, gee, you might have some confusion between, oh, my new apartment door and my old house door. That's all just stuff from the past. And if we are run by that power person dynamic, that means that our lives are run by the past. And when your life is run by the past, you get to live the title of my book. Why is this happening to me again? There's no future in the past. All there is replicating whatever's there. You'll remember that there was a student of Yeshua 2,000 years ago, And when he said, I want to follow you, I want to come do that. But then he said, but what I need to do is I need to go bury my father. Now, that didn't mean that his father had just died. There was a tradition in the culture that you took care of your father. If you were the oldest son, you took care of your father until he died. And so what this man was in essence saying to Yeshua is, yeah, I want to come do the work, but you know, what's really important to me is the past. That's what I need to take care of. And Yeshua was really clear. You know, there's no future in the past. There's no life there. It can only repeat the thoughts, the put-downs, the behaviors, the feelings that go with that power-person interaction. That's why it feels like crap. Whenever it's activated, whenever it's resonated into activity, and what resonates these things into activity is stress. So the level of stress you're under determines the behavior you will do out of the replicant mind based in the power-person dynamic. When there's no stress, and I just invite everybody to take a look at your life, when there's no stress, here's what runs your life. I guarantee it. Here's what runs the world. No stress. You'll do what you did to get along with your power person. That will be a decision. There's a thing in the mind we call the automatic decision system. It will kick in. It will take over. And it'll run your life. If you are not awake enough to run your life out of choice, then that decision will take over for you. When stress starts to build, you'll shift out of doing what you did to get along with your power person, and you'll shift into doing what you did to resist and survive with your power person. So, you know, maybe it was Mr. Joker or Ms. Joker when, you know, the stress was low. So, you know, this person, in order to get along with their power person, was always the joker, always was able to get a smile on dad's face by being the joker. Then when stress started to build, if what happened is he became Mr. Snarky or Ms. Snarky, then this person who's always jovial and funny, and all of a sudden there's a persona shift. Personality means mask in Greek. There's a personality shift in this person that maybe you've known them for 5 years. Maybe you married them and they've always been Mr. or Ms. Joker and fun and exciting and neat and cool. And all of a sudden, stress builds. You know, maybe they're working on a big, wonderful project, and there's so much on their minds that their stress is elevated to that next level. And it doesn't matter whether your stresses are wonderful or nasty. If your stress is elevated to that next level, then you'll shift into the second level of behavior, and that is you'll do what you did to resist and survive. So all of a sudden, this person you've lived with is Mr. Fun and or Miss Fun, and you know, things are cool. Stress builds, and all of a sudden, they're Mr. and Ms. Snarky, and you say, where did you come from? I've never seen you before. What happened? This isn't who I married. And then, when that same person becomes ultra-stressed, they will do what their power person did to them that they hated the most. And that's going to feel like hell because if it's the same hell, the same energetic dynamic is resonated by that stress as when it happened originally with the power person. So you'll go right back. If you were 3 years of age and there's a raging power person ready to punch you in the mouth and there's terror, then guess what happens when you get into that ultra-stress place? You'll go into terror. And maybe that power person punched you in the mouth. And what are you going to want to do? You're going to want to punch somebody in the mouth. So if you develop your spiritual faculties, the power of choice comes in, and rather than letting that dynamic run you, you can start to, and this isn't going to happen in an instant, but you can start to choose and you can forgive or remove those dynamics. And you're going to have to embrace and move through all the dynamics of its development, applying forgiveness at every turn. That's just what it's going to take. You're going to get to feel, you know, if it's something that happened repeatedly, you're going to get to feel each stage of assault from that power person. And it's going, your mind, if you're in denial, if you're in the game of everybody else is to blame in your life, whenever there's a stress, you talk about somebody else and they're the problem. Then what's going to happen is your mind's going to take all of the energetic dynamics of that power person experience, and they're going to project it into your brain's image of someone else. And the person you say, I dearly cherish you and I want to be so close to you, all of a sudden is going to become they're going to sit in the seat of, they're going to be transferred into this power person file in your mind, and they're going to become your power person. So you may start to say, you know, I really resent you. Why do I resent you? Well, my power person resented the hell out of me. I sucked in that energy when that dynamic was running. So now I don't resent anybody. You know, I would never have anything to do with resentment. So now that denied and dissociated content is projected into one's image of whoever they're interacting with. So a parent who hasn't resolved a power person dynamic with their parent has a three-year-old that, oh, they cherish, I cherish, I cherish, I cherish, I cherish, I cherish you. And all of a sudden, one day, ultra-stressed, the resentment that came from, that literally was absorbed, sucked in like a sponge from the power person, all of a sudden is projected in the brain's image of the child that's three. And here the parent now resents the child or the spouse. So you're going to have to embrace each stage of that and be conscious and move through the dynamics of the development of that. And at every twist and every turn, there's going to be the application of forgiveness. You know, when they said to Yeshua, how many times do we need to forgive? How many time worksheets do we need to do around a situation with this brother or that brother? And they ask him, is seven times enough? In Aramaic, his response was, no, 77 times 70. Power person dynamic is going to be probably 7 times 7 times 70. Every twist and turn, every time that was experienced, it's going to have to be moved through. So let's take an example. Imagine that your power person, with their negative energy, always told you what was wrong with your ideas. Why even the best idea that you had was crap. And why did they tell you it was crap? Because it was coming from you. They were under stress. They threatened. And in that threat, if you perceived it as survival, they were not functioning as love. They had the control. They had the power. And your field opened. And if what they continuously told you was what was wrong with you and why your ideas were never any good and why the best idea that you could come up with, there was always a reason given for why it was no good, why it would be refused, why that power person would say no, no matter what you were offering them, then, you know, you might wonder if that's what you play out. Why, when you point that dynamic at, you know, somebody who's close to you, why they kind of go gray every time you do it. Just think about it. Every time your power person puked on you with telling you what was wrong with you and why no matter how high a level of integrity, no matter how good a person you tried to be, there was always something wrong with you and you were never to be trusted. Remember how you used to go gray when that would happen? Have you ever watched the people when you point that dynamic, that power person dynamic at them, how they go gray? Now, if they're conscious, they'll keep coming back until it's all worked through. But most people just go gray, go black, disappear, gone, out of it. They don't have the capacity to stay conscious because they haven't worked through what their power person dynamic is. So when ultra-stressed, several things will become resonated and will tend to take over behavior. What do those things look like? Well, one, you will do what your power person did to you that you hated the most. Whatever that is will feel right, and the mind will literally hallucinate that that behavior that you hated so much is the key to success and winning, the key to safety. So that's one of the first things that's going to happen. So that behavior that you just abhorred, so back to that situation, being told what was wrong with you every time, notice that the automatic decision system will kick in. Key to being safe, the key to success, the key to winning will be telling this person what's wrong with them and that, you know, they could never have a decent idea, so puke on everything. Make up, you know, just make crap up. Make up any kind of crap you want that proves that their idea can't possibly be any good, just like your power person did with you. Then everything, every energy, mental, physical, emotion, leaves the open field of the child steeping in it. And whatever went into the power person doing what they did. So if, let's say, and again, this is an energetic dynamic. It's not necessarily a cognitive dynamic. So let's say that the power person, you know, something that's pretty common is people have blood sugar problems. And so when their blood sugar drops, they become like vicious bears. Literally, it's like, you know, I remember one year we had a woman in Heartland who was on the support team. And that was her reputation. And everybody started to realize that when she was hungry, she just became vicious. And it wasn't her volition. It wasn't her choice. It was just that if she didn't eat properly because of her blood sugar problems. And actually, I can remember very specifically what happened when this woman worked through that and it disappeared. But the reputation she had with everybody was when they saw that start, when that would happen and they'd feel that energy for her, it was like, we got to feed her, get her some food. And if she got some food, she'd recover from that. So whatever was going on with the power person, if they were hungry, then the tendency will be hunger. If they were sexually aroused, the tendency will be to go into sexual arousal under that great deal of stress. If they were in physical tension, because, again, remember, the child's energy field opens wide to absorb everything that's in the environment. And so if there was physical tension in the power person, then that energy is going to be absorbed, and then it's going to tend to be re-radiated 2 years, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years later, if it's never worked through, it will become the foundation of the behavior of that individual who was subject to the power person dynamic. And it'll run their lives when they're under stress. The next thing that will happen is that the voice coming out of your mouth will literally be the voice of your power person, literally. And it will appear to be your voice, but the energy behind it, literally the energy behind your voice and the thought and word patterns will be that of your power person. I mean, literally it will come right down to saying exactly the same words that you just, that just gritted your teeth if you ever heard your power person say it. But what happens is when somebody's under a great deal of stress, the mind is not available for reason to happen, for choices to happen. And so whatever kind of confusion is going on in the mind will just run the show. In that case, what happens when unconsciously looks into the person that they admired as God? And who was that? That was the person who won in those dire situations where it was survival. Power person was a parent. The parent is looked at as God. What did God do when the stress was up and the chips are down in order to win? And the unconscious mind advises that's what you do in order to win, right down to the thought and word patterns. The next thing that will happen is all of the goals absorbed from your power person will be active in you. And you'll probably be just as frustrated as they were that you can't control everything and everybody. You know, if your power person, if the energy that was going on was in that situation where the power person dynamic was installed in your mind was they needed to be in control and they were under great frustration, perhaps rage about not being able to be in control, then you'll be just as frustrated as they were that you can't control everything and everybody. And to try to control everything and everybody is the biggest mistake, because if you think you can control everything and everybody, that means you have to be responsible for everything and everybody. And that's more of a burden than anybody can carry. That's what ran your power person. It will tend to run you until you go, oh, that's why I feel so stressed when the stress is up and the chips are down and I'm trying to control somebody. And it doesn't matter who it is. You know, you can turn that energy on a child of three, on a newborn, on the cherished aging parent, on a grandmother, on a, you know, a cherished loved one. It's just how the game is played. It's just how the automatic decision system in the mind goes. And trying to be responsible for everything and everybody is more of a burden than anybody can carry. Literally than anybody can carry. It's too much. And if you want to destroy yourself, just try to carry that burden. Watch how things break down. Now, the next thing that will happen is this is the time that you most need to hear correction and most need to apply forgiveness because you're replicating the dynamics of the power person. But here's what will happen. You'll resist the same way as your power person did. If what was going on in the power person at that point, if you try to say, but Dad, but Mom, what about? And they said, shut up, kid. You're stupid. There's nothing you can tell me that would be useful. Then you will tend to have the same verve as your power person did, the same resistance, the same struggle against correction, against forgiveness. No, I don't want anything to do with it. And this is a really important reason to make choices before you get under that kind of stress. And all these things I'm describing are what your energy system is naturally going to cause you to feel like doing. And that's why you have to make a choice as to what you're going to do and never, ever again do what you feel like doing. Because if you do what you feel like doing, and I were to say to you, well, why are you doing that? And you say, I don't know, I just feel like it. What that means is there are unconscious thoughts in you that are running your life. And they're from the power person dynamic. And you'll have, I mean, if you remember, think back to how, you know, frustrated you were, how perhaps enraged you were at your power person, how much you wanted to get out of there with your power person. And notice that that's exactly the same energy that your power person had when the stress was up and the chips were down. The resistance to truth that the power person had will be your level of resistance. And in fact, it won't be you resisting. It will be your power person's resistance that's being replicated. Literally, the energy, remember, when the child is in that circumstance, the energy field of the child opens wide, and the physical, mental, emotional, sexual energy that's in the space is going to be absorbed by that child. So the same resistance to doing the work that needs to be done will be that of your power person. If you think about, did you ever sit down with your power person and say, well, what about, how about if you just look at this? Now, in the state where there was, the stress was up and the chips are down. Remember the resistance they had to even hearing anything you had to say? Remember how they puke on everything you advised, everything you suggested, even though your suggestions were wonderful and would have changed their lives forever. Be careful, because if that's happened to you with your power person, you're doing that with the people in your life now. When you get to ultra stress, remember, here's what the automatic decision system forces. It's going to force you to do what your power person did to you that you hated the most. And that causes people to go gray. Pardon me, that's an error. I shouldn't say that causes. If there's the tendency in someone to go gray, to just vacate, to just like, you know, kind of become black and white and disappear, that's what it will resonate in them until they work through it. And so, you know, each individual is responsible for what they're going to do in those situations. So the hostility that your power person had toward correction will be your hostility toward correction. Exactly what your power person did to you when you offered correction to them is what, under stress, the automatic decision system will kick in and cause you to do the people you're standing in front of. So the very attributes of the power person, the resistance to control, whatever it is, exactly what your mind energetically will feed back to you. So if your power person was resistant to admitting or looking at the truth of how they were treating you, and continue the negative treatment when you're ultra-stressed, you'll tend to refuse to admit how you're treating others, and you'll tend to continue treating them in that way. It's just what runs the situation, the the underlying dynamics in the mind. They're the energetic dynamics that are absorbed. So the question you want to ask yourself is, what exactly is the goal that when violated created so much stress, brought in such a level of stress that my mind used this unresolved, unconscious power person dynamic to build a pain-based reality that is massaged into looking like it's totally true about today's circumstance, but in fact, it's exactly being replicated from the past. So it really seems to be true about somebody else, but it causes me to displace the actuality of the moment with my pain perceptual construct, to put my reality in front of what the truth is. You know, somebody might be reaching out, cherishing you, honoring you, supporting you, but if the power person dynamic is active, what your mind will be inclined to do, what you'll feel like doing, is puking on them the same way your power person puked on you. And it's just something else to be forgiven. It's just something else to be removed. So that's the first thing to do, is to just take a look at that. What's the goal that when violated causes my mind to go into that state, and then start to do forgiveness around that goal? Disorder. What's the power person message that was given to me that's at the root of my pain-based perception? Now, this one's going to surprise you. How do you tell what it is? Just listen to what you're saying to the person in front of you. Listen to what you're saying to the person that you're in the current conflict with. That's your power person's voice speaking. And that's what you heard from your power person, replicating the words. So the person you're in a current conflict with, just look at what you're saying. There it is. In the current conflict, or if you look at it, the repeated conflicts that you've had. Because mine's just going to keep replicating this until it's completed. So take a look at that. And again, apply forgiveness. And then when I look at that thought disorder, conclusions do I come to about myself based on that unconscious thought disorder? What was the message that came from the power person? You're not trustworthy. You will never be trustworthy. You'll never be good enough. You'll always be the problem. You're always the bad one. You always were the bad apple. No, of course I could never trust you. Whatever the message is, oh, you should have been a girl. You should have been a boy. So what's the conclusion that I come to out of that thought disorder? And then what conclusion do I come to about them, based in this false construct of my mind? And I'm willing to really own that and move through that. And then if I were to really be truly, totally honest with myself, what's the actuality of the situation? If I stop replacing the actuality with this power person construct structure in my mind, if I allowed the actuality in, would it support me in healing my underlying thought disorder? Now, am I really sure that what my mind is telling me is true in this situation? And then, you know, to step into the forgiveness process, to step into the worksheet process, what's the goal that drives this whole thing? What is it that I want from this person in today's conflict? What is it that I want from them? Well, maybe I want them, you know, my goal is probably going to match what my power person wanted from me. Oh, I just want you to shut up and listen. I just want you to do what you're told. I want you to be controllable. So that power person message to me will tend to be the message that I hand on to someone else. So, and I, when I look at that goal and I choose to forgive, then I can start to crack that unconscious energetic pattern that's got such a crust. And remember, this is something, let's circle back to the beginning of our presentation today. This is something that's been in development for 1,000 generations in your bloodline. It's not going to crack easily. It may not crack on the first, the second, the 10th, or the 100th worksheet. And then take a look at what's the punishment that you do. And you probably don't call it punishment when you do it to the person that's in front of you today. But when your power person did it to you, you sure called it punishment. How did it feel when you were talked to that way, when you were spoken to in that tone of voice, when you were described with those kinds of words? How did that feel? And that's probably how you're feeling right now in the current situation, but it isn't based on what's happening in the current situation. It's based on what's stored, unresolved from the power person dynamic. And, you know, be aware that, you know, when my power person did that behavior, I probably called it abuse. When I do it, I don't call it abuse. I'll say that I'm just protecting myself or expressing my power or being careful or, you know, whatever it is that I choose to make the excuse of. So if I really look at that, call it something different, but and there'll be a resistance. Remember in Aramaic, the word Satan means the resister, one who misleads. If I've got a great deal of unresolved pain about something my power person did, you know, that's where it comes into, came into play in my mind, then today I'm going to tend to, when I'm doing exactly the same behavior my power person did to this other person, I'm going to say, but it's not that. It's something else. I'm just protecting myself or whatever, expressing my power. And then when I actually look at the facts, does anything support the conclusion I'm drawing when I'm under the spell of this power person dynamic? And am I willing to stop playing that one out? Like, how long does it go on, and how many people do I have to send away? How many people are going to leave? Yeah, I've got a whole story about they left because of what they were doing and they were abusing, but what was the part that I played? And am I willing to soften into that part and bring healing to it? And when I do, then everything changes. And I get to drop into place where there's such deep resonating pain. And this is the part that is not Dr. Feelgood, but it's a profound place to go as love. Bringing love present with you dissolves all those old power person dynamics. So am I willing to soften and embrace directly, rather than projecting my brain into another, this deep, it might be rejection, might be hate, it might be rage, viciousness, whatever it is. Am I willing to soften and embrace this energy coming from inside of me? And if I'm not, then I'll get to do it again. This will be, you know, if I never get learned to change this, then I'll get to live the title of my book. Am I doing this to myself again? And it's time for that to just be dissolved and cleaned up. And in regard to relationship, this is kind of like the core of the codependence piece. You know, remember, our definition of denial is, or whenever I think or speak as if something outside of me is the cause of what's happening inside of me, I'm in denial. When I go into denial, I have to dissociate from the part of me that's the real cause. Invariably, where there's hostility or fear, the power person dynamic is involved in the real cause. And that's what I need to embrace and move through. So that's what we're here to support you doing. Waking up to the truth of who you are. Living as conscious, active, present love. And moving past this power person dynamic. So I hope that fits and makes sense. It's kind of a new level of, for me, after a quarter of a century of teaching it, it's just new insights that are opening to broaden this understanding of the power person dynamic. I move from codependence. What's a codependent? Codependence is exactly the same definition of our definition of the now. Whenever I think or sitting outside of me or somebody is outside of me and they're responsible for what's happening inside of me, I'm in a codependent relationship. Doesn't matter if I think the dog scared me. You know, the dog caused all this fear in me. I'm in codependent relationship with the dog. Now, if I have fear and I can own it, instead of talking about how the dog frightened me, I go, wow, that dog looked so vicious, brought up so much terror and fear in me. Now I can come into direct relationship with my terror and fear and start to delete it, start to forgive it. But if I think the dog caused it, I'm stuck in the construct of my mind called perception that lies to me. And we're looking to support shifting that dynamic. And it is literally the dynamic that runs the whole world. I don't care whether you go into a business, a church, an educational institution, government, family. I don't care whether the family is Russian or American or English, British, French, Chinese. I don't care who it's the dynamic that runs the world. Few are there those that will wake up from it. And what we're working to do is to get enough people to become conscious enough that they wake up from it. And when we get a core group of people who are conscious and work through that, then together we will energetically create a safe space for this dynamic to be disappeared from the world and for us to function as human beings. So that's what we're here to do. And we're glad that you're here to be part of the process. And Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
It is all quiet, but we've got 16 minutes. We've got plenty of time. Press one or ask your question in the chat room.
Yeah, if you're out there in listener land, again, our call-in number, 563-999-3581. I can't imagine that anybody listening wouldn't have some kind of thought over what I just presented.
We have a hand up.
Yeah, good. Cool. Let's say hello.
541, you're on the air. Who do we have?
Celinda.
Well, hey there, young lady. How are you?
Well,
how's
I'm
that
doing
power
really
person
well.
Dynamic looking in your mind?
Full blown and real big. I am working with her just I'm just really abiding with her and working with her. And so I wanted to tell you how much I appreciate your elaboration today. It's like you took my understanding or you shared information that allowed me to understand on a much deeper level the dynamics of my life and the challenges I have in my relationships with loved ones and with my community.
You know, it's important to look in both directions with this power person dynamic. So you look at when you were the object of the power person situation, that will open a space for tremendous healing. And then if you look at where you were the power person, when you look in both directions, healing will accelerate.
That's sweet news because that's exactly how I took your expansion of the power person dynamic. And I saw whole aspects of my behavior with other people in a much fuller dimension to result. So, yes, I hope it blasts me into the wonderful space of my own healing me in partnership with the Holy Spirit, creation, life.
Sweet. So any specific thought that you want to share, insight that you want to share, or question that's on your mind?
Well, a couple of them. I realized that it would be nice to do a worksheet around shame. Like there are two consistent themes that show up in my life around the worksheets, and one is shame. Of course, fear is always there. And my uncovering of my unconscious rage, as I shared with you before, one of the greatest confirmations for me came from your book was those little stick diagrams of the man and the woman, and one consciously being aware of rage and the and unconsciously locked down with fear, and the other one being the one consciously aware of fear with the lockdown of rage, which was my pattern. And it doesn't matter whether it's
matching bags of garbage.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right.
And so my unconscious rage would tend to propel me into relationships where rage and hostility would be a dynamic at the same time, and also a rage for my quote-unquote imperfections of my parenting and the dynamics of that intergenerational downflow of downloads, and how I myself, through my unknowingness, my ignorance, my knowing nothing, and my inability, if I did know at that time, because I didn't have the tools, to pass that again down to the next generation. And so that is involved with my shame as well. My shame for being worthless and can never do it right, plus linked with my shame of being the abuser or the...
Do you remember when you got those messages from your power person? Do you remember specific times you were handed those thought disorders
remember.
In that survival situation?
Right. I don't actively remember, but my mother was very proud of the way she raised me. And she was the one, I've mentioned this before, and she was the one that would, that in that situation when I was about 2 years old and had my first temper tantrum, made sure that I wouldn't have another one. Yeah. And she was very proud.
Pretty heavy duty.
Mm-hmm. And I don't remember it consciously, and I'm not even sure if I'm supposed to remember it consciously, but I do see that the energy is stuck in my body, and it comes out in different ways. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not necessary to have cognitive awareness of it. That's the beauty of this piece that Yeshua gave us of forgiveness, is that when you apply first century Aramaic forgiveness, you collapse the perception based on the, deep, maybe 20 generation old energetic dynamic that's playing out here. And that may never become cognitive, or it may, but you get to process the energy of it. You get to hold love present. Well, the impetus of that energy might not be strong enough to ever form a picture in your mind or reform the memory in your mind. But energetically, you get to process the underlying energetic dynamic. And that might take, as Yeshua said, 77 times 70 worksheets. But as you do that work, the result is just monumental.
There are a couple of things that I've become aware of physiologically for myself. One is that my shaking that I mentioned to you with my arm and my hand, which is always my left hand, that, by the way, is my dominant hand, that only happens when I am in a hypoglycemic state and or a very, very nervous state, extremely nervous. And then the other, and it doesn't do it with my right hand, which is, I find, very interesting. And I've come to a tentative possibility that is my rage coming out when that incident happened, because it's coming out through my arm and through my hand.
Yeah, I think you'll
find
that rage
tends to be moving. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you'll find that the rage tends to be more oriented toward the thyroid. It's in the it's usually grief, and so, you know, the situation that you described that your mom was so proud of probably would have resonated grief in you as a small child, you know, the rejection, all of the things that go with being treated like that by a power person, thinking they're doing themselves and the child and the family system a favor. But that grief is what tends to lock the pancreas down. I don't know if you've ever looked at the chart or physiological effects of emotional suppression. When you talk about being hypoglycemic, that's pancreas, that tends to be unresolved grief.
In the Touch for Health or in the 12 meridian system, which I have found very, very helpful, the traditional Chinese medicine, I have run across the lack of sweetness in one's life, which would, to me, in my mind, basically be what I would basically understand is what you're saying. The sweetness, I have no sweetness in my life, was what kind of what that.
Well, I support you supplying yourself with some, young lady.
Yeah, right, with my eating disorders, yeah, definitely. And also the helplessness and hopelessness. I mean, why would I lock that rage down because of being 2 years old, helpless and hopeless? So I've been looking at that. And for the first time today, although I have entertained it intellectually, for the first time today, I got more of a body feeling on how that was what my mother was feeling right when she was in that place. Shameful, powerless and helpless. And if she didn't control me, her life would be totally uncontrolled, uncontrollable.
Right. Think about times when you played the power person dynamic out with your kids, and what was going on with you there, and what messages did you deliver? Those will relate back to the messages you got.
Actually, I remember a specific incident with my daughter where she was about 2 years old and had what I considered was her first temper tantrum, and I started to do exactly the same thing that my mother was telling everybody was the way that she disciplined, quote-unquote, me when I was two, and I started spanking her little legs, and this voice came into my head and said, stop it.
Yeah.
And I did.
Good.
But still, it was
Yeah. And chances are, if you got to the point where you started that, your daughter was already in the space where all the her field was open, and she was just absorbing all of that.
Exactly.
As you absorbed that from your mother, and the resultant playing out of that when absorbing this, you know, this violence towards self and this rejection would tend to implant the thought disorder of there's something wrong with me.
And also the sense of hopelessness and powerlessness, which would tell me I can't win, right? As you mentioned earlier in the show, I can't win.
Yeah.
So my only hope is escape. So there was my fear route, my terror route, when the chips were really down, to be terrorized, to literally be hysterical, have a nervous breakdown, and not be able to function, or to be immobilized, frozen. Yeah.
Yeah. And so to be able to embrace... You know, to be that immobilized is terror,
right?
I would think in most cases. And so to be able to literally embrace that level of terror, to let your physiology open to embrace that level of terror.
And there were two times that I felt that terror that I consciously remember. And one was when we were sailing across the ocean. I can't believe I'm talking so calmly. One time was when we were
You've done your work around it.
I know. And the way of mastery is really opening me up, Michael and Jeannie.
Sweet.
It's just helping me. It's helping me understand what you're saying. It's almost like for me, it's the way of the heart and the way of the Christ mind coming together, you know, like you have more of the intelligent explanation of things, and the way of the heart, as Dr. Tim is reading it and as he expounds on it when he's reading it, is really stirring that heart energy in me. And that's where I've mostly come from through my life. Somehow I think I must have come in with the understanding that it's all about the heart. It's all about relationship. It's all about connection. But didn't understand it, really. It just was like a little download that came in with all the other stuff. Yeah,
my input at this point would be that what it's all about, and when you're in that state, it's all about forgiveness.
Right. But if you don't trust, and that but is not to negate what you say, however, if you don't trust, you can't forgive yourself. Scratch that.
Well,
you can't do the forgiveness work. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you can. You don't have to have trust to do it. You don't have to have belief.
Oh,
you don't
okay.
have to have anything. If you just step into using the forgiveness tool, you know, remember that when perception is based on a power person dynamic, there's a goal that drives it. And, you know, it doesn't matter what I know, what I understand, what I can embrace, if I'll cancel that goal that's driving my mind to use that pained content, that perceptual construct in my mind that comes from that unconscious pained content is going to collapse in on itself. And if I can call love forward in the presence of that, then it's going to dissolve. So, you know, there are no precursors to being able to do that. I don't have to trust. I don't have to believe. I don't have to know. I don't have to understand. I don't have to care. No precursors. All I have to do is engage the tool.
Well, it's really interesting that you say that, because I was going to share with you the two other moments of terror where I was totally undone. I think I came through the first one more successfully in relation to bringing it to awareness than I did the second. But I'm not sure about that. So anyway, the first was when we were sailing across the ocean and things started
right.
breaking down in the boat, and we were left without our equipment and stuff. And here we are on the ocean, and I was totally dependent on Larry's incredible ability to do celestial navigation, because that's what
right.
brought us home. We had no
equipment.
We're
down to 1 minute.
Okay. And so I was so terrorized that my physical body symptoms told me very concretely that I was going to kill myself if I didn't get out of that terror. And a little voice said, do you want to live or do you want to die? And that was, I said, I'll
yeah.
live. Yeah, that's it. And I'll share another one,
is.
The other one, another time if appropriate.
Okay. Well, maybe we can continue this conversation on Monday. We'll see how it settles in through the weekend. I know for me, this opening on a new level of power person dynamics has been going on for several days now. So we'll see what opens and perhaps continue the conversation on Monday. Appreciate you.
Thank you. And maybe it'll end up in the downloads, too, on the site. That'll be great.
It will.
Blessings.
We can listen again. All right. Take care and blessings. Lots of love. Bye-bye.